the reality is kids face a different situation than when you and I grew up.
You bet. Yeah.
And it wasn't that long ago that I was a kid. It's unbelievable how things have changed so much. It's not just social media.
Right.
And I'm not trying to be judgmental. It's not about that. I don't care if it's a mom or a dad or an uncle or an aunt, whatever. The support system children have, those advocates growing up, it's just not what it used to be.
Right.
It's not there anymore.
Right. I'm Flint Anderson, founder of PAIN, Parents and Addicts in Need. I've been in recovery since 2001, and there isn't much I don't know about recovery. And my mission is to constantly tell the truth about addiction, to make the realities of addiction, recovery, and drug culture known, and to drive awareness and advocate change that ultimately saves lives.
And I'm Jason LaChance, a certified recovery coach with a passion for speaking with others and sharing their knowledge to help others seek recovery and maintain long-term sobriety. And this is the Don't Hide the Scars podcast, presented by PAIN, Parents and Addicts in Need.
All right, I'm letting you bring it.
No, you bring it in tonight.
No, you bring it in. You bring it. I'm in the shotgun seat, so introduce our guest for the listeners.
Well, listen, we're happy to have Mike Carbasi with us today. Mike's a dear friend. I just love what he does, and you know, he's running again, and
yes,
you know, we definitely want him in that seat. So, Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
Good.
29 days to go.
29 days to go. Yeah. And you were telling me that you're out hoofing it.
Oh yeah, since April, but it's raining now, so I got my blue poncho and all my literature is getting wet. But it's okay. It's
right.
What you got to do. People
right,
need
right,
to see out there.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Hey, there's some crazy wet guy on the front
yeah.
the doorstep.
I have to tell them I'm not selling solar. I swear.
Well, heck, you've been around so long. You think they'll just recognize
they
you?
They do.
Anyway,
no, they
right?
do now.
Yeah,
fortunately,
yeah.
It's different than last time. I'm very lucky that. They recognize me and no one's thrown a tomato or anything. You know, the nicest thing is when they invite me in. Now, you got to be careful there,
yeah.
But usually it's okay.
Yeah. That's great. That's great. So just let our audience know a little bit. What are some of your biggest battles?
Sure. I mean, look, I think that one of the biggest battles of being in local office, and remember, this is what they call retail politics. Your council member is somebody that you know. You see them at the grocery store. You see them, you know, at the gas station, whatever. So it's a lot of personalities involved. Ego is not my ego, but egos, other egos is the biggest battle, if it makes any sense, because we have real work to do for people. From making sure your garbage is picked up on time, the parks are clean, when you call 911, someone answers timely and a police response or fire response is out there. Mm-hmm. These aren't just small issues. This is everyday issues for folks. So my biggest battle is dealing with, it's not even partisanship. It's the nonsense of, you offended me because you didn't give me credit for this, or I want to have all the oxygen in the room. Reagan had this quote, and I'm gonna butcher it, but basically, you can accomplish anything when you don't care about who gets the credit.
Yeah.
So. I mean, it's. I would say the biggest battle is that. But you know what? I stay out of that fray, and I get what I need done for my district. We have a lot of exciting things happening. One thing that's been really important is road safety.
Right.
We've been able to reduce violent crime a lot in Fresno, significantly. Mm-hmm. I mean, like homicides are down 43%. Commercial burglaries down 44%. Residential burglaries down 25%.
Mm-hmm.
That's important.
Yeah.
But we have a lot of red light runners. We have a lot of distracted drivers. Like a couple things we've done around our schools is upgrade the infrastructure, new traffic signals. We're doing one. This is going to sound really silly, but you ever drive on Autobahn?
I do.
Okay. So it's Autobahn like the tree, not the right raceway.
Right.
But that it's a neighborhood road.
Yeah.
And it's people take it as a shortcut. They've been trying for 20 or more years to get a traffic signal and crosswalk. And we just broke ground about a month ago.
Right.
And they're finally going to have that. Again, it may seem small in the scheme of things, but that's important to the neighborhood. That's the stuff I love doing.
Absolutely. Because I if memory serves, there is a police officer that kind of waits at that curve.
I can confirm or deny nothing.
right before you get to Woodward Park, there's
right.
a little corner
Del Mar.
Right there. Yeah, yeah. And he kind of sits right
and
there.
And that's where the new signal will be. So no more tickets. You just stop and you'll be okay.
Exactly.
Well, that's so important. You know, I don't want people to sleep on it because at the end of the day, all this stuff, everything that Flint and I speak on is all about increasing public safety.
Mm-hmm.
For
Absolutely.
A prosperous individual and a prosperous community.
Absolutely.
And we're doing a lot. There's a lot of things going on that counteract that, in my estimation.
But that's why your work is so important. So I was really lucky in the five years I've been around doing this. I did a lot of ride-alongs with the police department. Here's the challenge. You go from call to call to call. And it's not like, let's say it's a robbery or something, or a domestic issue, which is even worse. It doesn't happen just right there. There's a history to that.
You bet.
And the troubling thing is our officers go from call to call to call. They have about 10 calls a night or more. They don't get that closure. What's important for them, they do this with the Marjorie Mason Center a lot, and I know they do it with your organization or Breaking the Chains. They're able to say, here is a service you can use, mm-hmm. because that provides at least them with some closure, but it provides relief. We have to break that cycle.
Right.
And that's what I love about what you do, what Payne does, is that you involve the family in the whole process. It's not just the individual. And it's not about being, I don't know, it's tough love, but it's not. It's, hey, we've got to do something about this. And we in government, I don't have experience with that, I'll admit it. I mean, I have experience with my family. We're very cliche. We're Persian and created a Persian rug store. I know about rugs, but I don't know about other things. I have to learn.
Yeah.
And we rely on experts like you in government and partnering with you. And we need to empower you. You're not some, not to criticize, you're not some national organization. You are local.
Right, right.
You have experience. And we need to give you the tools you need so you can augment. Police isn't always the answer.
Right.
Treatment is very important.
Correct.
But if we don't have a system in place, then we're never going to get anywhere and change, break the cycle.
Yeah, and breaking that cycle is what's important. And it really seems, especially in the last few years, that there's not a lot of people that are actually giving solutions to the problems. Mm. You know, it's we here, you know, we do have solutions. That's why sometimes I find it very, I don't even know what, mind-boggling, mm-hmm. that we continue to do the same things over and over again. It's that old insanity routine,
right? Einstein quote, right?
And I don't know why. And bring up, I'm getting to my point here, you know, because we are talking about the city, we are talking, mm-hmm. about our city schools here, and we know that our kids are our most important resource,
yep,
that we could ever have. And in my opinion, we're just not doing enough to, I guess, protect their safety, especially, mm-hmm. in my world, you know, where, look, Clovis is kind of the other side of the, mm-hmm. of the street here. But we just worked with Clovis Unified on getting Narcan into every classroom. Mm-hmm.
It's big.
It's huge.
Yep.
Absolutely huge. And by the way, I don't care if they never have to use a box of Narcan,
right?
But it's that fire extinguisher that's sitting
there. The AED,
there.
Whatever it is.
The AED.
Absolutely.
Right? Okay. Why is it so difficult for, I got to say it, and I'm probably going to get in a little trouble for it, but why isn't Fresno Unified,
yep.
all over this?
You would think, so I'm a product of both Fresno and Clovis. You would, Unified.
Right.
You would think that Clovis would say, we don't want that in our classroom. There's a stigma there, but it's the opposite. To me, it's a matter of responsibility. I'm not sure why it happens with Fresno Unified. I mean, you would think, because they've embraced a lot of the reality kids have. I mean, for goodness sake, they offer food during the holidays, which is very important. They have, right. laundry service for kids out there.
Right.
Why wouldn't they have Narcan?
Right.
The reality is, kids face a different situation than when you and I grew up.
You bet. Yeah.
And it wasn't that long ago that I was a kid. It's unbelievable how things have changed so much. It's not just social media.
Right.
And I'm not trying to be judgmental. It's not about that. I don't care if it's a mom or a dad or an uncle or an aunt, whatever. The support system children have, those advocates growing up, it's just not what it used to be.
Right.
It's not there anymore.
Right.
And that's broken down. And so my fiance is a teacher. And when you're a teacher, you're almost, in a sense, like a parent who's very unempowered because the parents get mad at you or the administration gets mad at you and you're kind of stuck when you want to be that advocate for the kids.
Right.
I don't know what the answer is. It's unfortunate, but maybe we should have some more conversations about that.
Yeah, we should. And look, what I'm about to say has been kind of the stumbling block or the roadblock why some of these school districts haven't taken it is because of the cost. Well,
okay.
Guess what?
I'm sorry, but they've got major reserves. How much is that kid's life worth?
I know that, but this even gets better, right? Okay. This even gets better. We're contracted with the state of California. We have to give it away for free.
Well, there you go.
And we've told them.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
It's free to them. It's now, we have hard costs that are associated with us,
right.
and going out and talking to people and training people on Narcan,
right.
and all that sort of stuff. But it's free. So
right.
the cost doesn't come into play anymore
right.
here.
And nowadays, with the ability for fentanyl to be laced into things you don't know about, and again, I don't know a whole lot about this, but an unintended use can happen to where you need Narcan. And imagine being a teacher or being an administrator in that school and not knowing what to do.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know how timelines work, but you can call 911, but it could very well be.
It's not going to work.
There you go.
Yeah. It's not going to work. Look, a person has seconds and minutes
right.
to get to somebody. This right. isn't a half hour wait. It's
right.
it's none of that. By the way, there are, and I believe I'm correct in this, there were 4 reported cases last year of 3- and 4-year-olds
oh, no.
that came to school and died of an overdose simply because of their home environment. There was a user in the house.
Right.
The user had left something on, you know, a little bit, and sometimes it's not even noticeable by the
right.
site. The kid touched it, put it in their mouth.
Right.
And there you go. And I loved what Clovis Unified said too. What about the delivery drivers that come onto the school campus?
Mm-hmm.
What they have more than just students and teachers coming onto
point.
Those campuses.
Yeah. Yep.
So let's have it. And I do want to back up to Fresno Unified for a second. They have stated that they are going to put it in strategic locations in some of the schools.
Okay.
And there is a part of me that says, okay, do we really need it in a kindergarten class? I mean, but again, my answer is yeah.
Because you never know.
Because you just
yeah.
never
what
know.
Is it, what is it going to hurt?
And what
right.
about the teacher?
But,
yeah.
but what is it going to hurt? I mean, I would
Hurts
love
no
it.
One.
Oh, I don't want it to ever happen, but I would love it if someone gets a call, there's an overdose, and 5 teachers run up with Narcan because they all have access to it.
Right.
I mean, I don't want that to ever happen, but if it does happen, better to be overprepared than underprepared when you're talking about a child's life.
Absolutely, and especially when Narcan itself has no other properties
right.
to it.
That's right.
None.
So, like, for example, right now, if you ding me and you give me Narcan, it's not going to...
You're going to get a runny nose.
That's it.
Yeah. That's it.
Right?
Yeah. And you can shove 8 boxes up your nose. You're still going to just have a
We're not trying
nose.
That today, though.
But we're not.
We don't need
sure?
to.
Sure, let's just put you right here.
Look, yeah. take our word for it. It's true. There's plenty of YouTube videos that demonstrate this. We don't need to test this fact right. out.
New Perceptions North, the premier drug and alcohol treatment and recovery center in Central California. A full continuum of medically supervised top quality care with programs for detox and patient residential treatment with dual diagnosis, intensive outpatient treatment, sober living support groups, and more. New Perceptions North provides adult men and women with the highest caliber of professional health care, treating each client with compassion and respect. In a safe, comfortable environment to begin the process of recovery, to proudly create and sustain a life without addiction. Call 559-978-1507 or visit newperceptionsnorth.com.
The other thing I've been interested in a lot with you is your relationship with Darius and GV Wire and,
sure.
and all and how did all that come about? Because I really like that show that you guys do.
So the pandemic, you know, changed everything to where it was really a really scary time.
Right.
And, you know, it was difficult because you couldn't see each other. So I think he got this idea. Let's just do like a web show virtually, which it was all Zoom. Like nowadays we'd be in the studio sitting like together.
Right.
But it was, for the longest time, just Zoom. And we would just, you know, it was myself and Steve and Darius, and we just started talking about local issues related to services that are out there in the pandemic. The whole point was to inform the public about what's going on. The show's evolved. Steve is now off because of his campaign. And now I'm off the show because of my campaign.
Right.
So it's just Darius now, which I feel bad because I want to be on there with him.
Right.
And there's a lot of really important issues to discuss, especially today. But getting local news is getting harder and harder.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why we call it unfiltered is we want to be able to talk about issues realistically. Issues that are, it may seem mundane, but they're really important. Like when the council passes this really nuanced policy on housing, but how is it going to impact you? Is it going to make it more expensive for you to buy a home?
Mm-hmm.
Measure C, very important tax measure. What's going to happen there? Are we going to have money for our roads? And why did it fail? And where's the money going to go if it's passed again?
Right.
Stuff like that.
Right. No, I'm so glad you guys came up with this because it really is. And you've had me on a couple of times.
Well,
and
he's looking for a new co-host, Flint. I'm just saying, if you're freaking Tuesday nights, you should do it.
Boy, I worked in radio for 20 years and we had the candidates that were local candidates.
Uh-huh.
And it used to be like, guess what? You get to run the news station too for a few
there
months.
There you go.
Oh, great. Okay. And I'll put a link in the description for GV Wire. Really great if folks have not checked it out, especially here in the Fresno.
Especially for local
area.
News.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, and it is hard to get, I mean, we've got great relationships with all the local news
mm-hmm.
stations, but you know, they only have so much time to dedicate to each story. They got to keep moving, give enough for everybody and inform. So it is nice to get those longer form conversations going, especially about our local issues. I mean, these, it's nice to get people that will come from different perspectives, and it's the ones I've watched, it's always conversational, which is nice too.
You're absolutely right. Because for me, media, I know that right now it's a difficult time because what's the definition of media? Information on TikTok, for example. But I'm talking about conventional media, local media. It's the fourth branch of government. It keeps us honest. It really is important. Yeah, some of them, there's a slant, but we have some great reporters in this valley. But yeah, when it's television, you've got 30 seconds. That's all you got. So having an article that goes more in depth is great.
Right. So I give a lot of this from a lot of the parents that I deal with. Mm-hmm. We talk about the marijuana issue a lot. Look, and again, around here in my world, you know, marijuana is a gateway. I will always believe it is, because if you ask any of us that have gone down the addiction road, what did we start with? We started with marijuana and alcohol.
No, here's the thing. I know it's for some reason a controversial statement. Data can show whatever it wants, but I got to tell you, from my experience, seeing friends and some family, that's what it starts with: alcohol or marijuana.
Right. It's the accessibility.
Yeah.
Correct. And I don't know if it opens up gateways, pathways to other things, but especially when you're young and you're using alcohol or marijuana and you don't have a developed brain, data does show that it will affect your ability for the rest of your life. Right. It can. Everyone's different. I understand that.
Right.
But
right.
Yeah. So.
But again, and the marijuana is much stronger today than it was when I was using it in 60s and 70s.
Absolutely.
And that type of thing. We see a lot of more psychotic breaks, you know, on and on. So, look, the biggest concern that a lot of my parents have and the people that I talk to are over the dispensaries.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, how do they, if at all, protect our kids from walking in there and getting what they want? And that's just a huge concern.
Right. So I wasn't the biggest fan of the dispensaries. I fought a few of them in my district, especially ones that were close to schools.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Again, Clovis Unified, a very engaged district, and they really put the effort out there to do that. I was overruled by my colleagues. Look, I understand the argument for when you're an adult, allowing medicinal use of cannabis products and derivatives versus opiates. I can get the logic in that.
Yeah.
But
believe it or not, so can I.
We're reasonable.
Yeah. Yeah.
But my concern is, okay, how's this going to work? I have to say, there is one dispensary in my district for the most part. I have not heard. I got one call from a resident last week after a year in business that there was a concern, which we're looking into. But there are requirements in place. Security systems, limiting how many people can go inside, checking ID. Every operator is different.
Right.
I'm glad that the one in my district has not had these issues. And you can't really tell it's a cannabis dispensary. It looks like a Apple store.
Okay.
But again, everyone's different. I think you have one that opened across the street from here, where we are now. So we have the ability to hold them responsible. The only benefit of the dispensary versus on the street is it's regulated by the state, so we can know what's in the product. And they have to track all that stuff. But when it comes to kids, our city attorney's office has become very aggressive working with the attorney general. One of the few things I can agree with him on is going after people that sell legally cannabis, edibles, those things, especially when kids have access to it.
Right.
We did raid a facility, a couple of these smoke shops in my district.
Right.
They had some illegal gambling in there, and they had other things that they were selling they shouldn't have sold, all on a cash basis.
Mm-hmm.
So we do have teeth to go after it.
Good.
So I'm actually not worried about the regulated shops. What I'm worried about are the smoke shops that, not all of them, but the ones that are doing illegal things.
Right.
We have to be aggressive on them. And fortunately, we have a city attorney in Andrew Jans, who's former prosecutor.
Right.
Very aggressive on that front.
Good, yeah. good. Because, you know, again, it kind of goes back with me with the kids, right? And that those younger generations here that, you know, again, I know there's been some reported cases, especially in Colorado, you know, where an infant or maybe a three-year-old or four-year-old, you know, had gotten an edible.
Right.
And wow. I mean, hell broke loose.
And I mean, if I was Fruit Loops, I would be a trademark suit all over that. They package them to look like regular snacks. So a kid will not know.
Right.
Why are they doing that? I mean, if I recall, but when I was very young, they made it illegal to I mean, they changed how you can promote tobacco and cigarettes. You can't do TV ads anymore because they were kind of tailored to the youth.
Yep. Right.
Well, and I saw an interesting, it was a social media post. It was a mom that she was crying. I found a vape pen in my son's room, and she's going on and on. And unfortunately, it's not marijuana. It's tobacco. And I'm thinking, look, I get you've been really heavily those ads out there about the vape pens. But I'm sorry, like marijuana, like Flint was saying, psychotic breaks. It's not benign.
Right.
This is not Cheech and Chong back in the day. Well, 60s, 70s.
Where we just eat a bunch of Twinkies, right? Yeah. Right. And go to sleep for 18.
No, right. It's totally different than it was back. But also, what concerns me is for that mom. When I was a kid, if I was ever to get caught smoking, I get my butt whooped. Things have changed.
Yeah, but to look, I get it, but like to have it to where it's as simple as just the vape pens and the nicotine.
Right.
Look, nicotine by itself.
Yeah.
Not the hugest of issues. Right. Like I just had a cup of coffee.
Right.
So nicotine by itself, granted.
Oh, you were saying vape pens. I was thinking. Yeah. I'm sorry. Forgive me. Yeah.
But with all the stuff that is in it, and the nickel, and obviously, yes, have that concern.
Sure.
No, you don't want your child using any sort of thing.
Sure.
But please don't skip town on the fact that THC is not benign. Like Flint was saying, I mean, some of these amounts that are in some of this stuff
is unbelievable,
astronomical.
Right. Well, what would you say? I mean, for parents in Northwest Fresno, that let's say you're. I mean, I'm thinking, 12, 13, 14, maybe we're going back sooner. What are some of the signs you have to look for? Is it pulling away from the family and not wanting to talk? What are the signs? I don't know.
That's always a big one. But it's hard to discern, especially when you're dealing with a 12, 13, 14-year-old, because they're all a pain in the ass, right? They're all moody,
right?
They're all not smiling, okay? Right. They're just a pain in the butt.
They're all the gee, mom, gee, dad.
right. But that is something. They pull away from the family. Some of their friends start to disappear a little bit, and some of that, a change of friends coming in.
Okay.
Diet, even though, kids are basically going to eat crap.
Right.
You really have to watch the sugar intake and see if it's above normal.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
If that sugar intake is greater than what it's normally been, I'm not saying somebody's a drug user, but that is definitely a sign.
I didn't know that sugar intake. Okay.
The sugar intake. You bet. As an opiate addict, wow. I mean,
I didn't know that.
These are all brand new teeth, by the way, because of it. I would pound down, 12 Mountain Dews a day, Snickers bars.
And that's just your body craves
the
that.
Body
because
craves
interesting.
It. The body craves it.
Similar with me through alcohol recovery. Okay.
Yeah.
Same kind of like.
Even with alcohol. Interesting.
Well, because you got to think, it's ethyl alcohol. It's
right.
Sugar.
There you go.
Yeah.
So you need more of that. That makes sense. Okay.
I still have the, I want some ice cream right now.
Oh, yeah. Seriously, speaking of Fruit Loops, I'd take Fruit Loops and I'd literally put sugar on top of the Fruit Loops.
Right, and they are, sure.
And eat that. Again, some weight loss, is there clothing changing? Are they dressing differently?
What about boys versus girls? Is there any difference there?
There's really not.
Okay.
There's really not. The behavior is pretty much the same.
Okay.
And believe it or not, girls can actually become a little more volatile than boys can.
Right.
You can't be afraid as a parent to get into the kid's phone.
Right.
You can't be afraid to drug test your kid if you think something's wrong.
Here's my question. Since when do you have any rights before you're 18? I'm with parents. Like, I don't know what happened there because my parents were never intrusive, but I always knew, if they want to know what I'm doing, I can try lying, but I'll get caught because they talk to each other and it's a small town, especially Northwest Fresno. And what's the point? But now it's like, no, it's my child's privacy. You're paying for the phone.
Right.
There is no privacy.
There's no privacy. Yeah. There's none. Well, again, what I tell parents, you can either get in your kid's business or you might be the last person closing the coffin lid.
I've heard you say that before. That's a good point.
Right?
Yeah.
And again, it's not to be mean. It's not any of that.
It's to be responsible.
Be responsible.
Right.
Be a
right.
responsible parent. Right. And I am going to say this. You mentioned that, because you're representing the northwest side of town.
Sure.
Those are my clients.
Right. Right.
Right? I mean, let's just call it what it is here. And I can't tell you how many parents over the years go, my God, I wish I would have listened to you when you were back then and
sure.
blah, blah, blah. So this isn't to – what I do isn't to ruin your kid's life, right? No. By not having fun and all that sort of stuff. But my God, I can't tell you. Look, we've seen over 10,000 families since we've
10,000.
10,000 wow. Since we started in 2009.
Right.
That's a boatload of
absolutely.
Families coming
absolutely.
Through there.
That makes a difference.
And again, 90% of them northwest side of Fresno and
right.
Clovis Unified,
right.
you know. So it's as a parent, you just have to be aware. I just can't I beg parents.
Well, let's talk about stigma and cultural differences, because
sure.
in some cultures you don't want to talk about it, which is, I think, I understand that, but you have to kind of push through that, because like you said, the ultimate cost can very well easily just in a moment be an overdose.
Correct.
And they're gone. Have you had to deal with that issue, or dealing with maybe people from more Far East cultures, and give me some of your thoughts on that.
Yes. Look, again, no matter how you look at it, mm-hmm. this is cultural as mm-hmm. as well when you're dealing with families. Obviously, I'm married into an Armenian family,
sure.
right? So I know that
sure.
culture. And again, people from the Middle East. I literally have had parents come in here and say, you know, my son just needs to eat better and needs to get
sure.
married,
sure.
right?
It's like watching My Big Fat Greek Wedding. Just eat something.
Just
right?
eat something.
Yeah.
And I'm not exaggerating.
No, he's having too much sugar. It's a sign. No.
Right?
Right?
Right? I mean, to explain it any further, it's if you understand the word cultural, then you're going to get what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter. Armenians are different from
Persians, for example.
Persians.
Even though we're similar, we are different.
Correct.
Indians
correct.
Are different than
Asians.
Yeah, right.
Right. That's
sure.
that's another one. African Americans, Hispanics.
Sure. We have our own cultures within our culture. Right.
Yeah.
You do. And for example, Hispanics. There is more of a drug problem among Hispanics.
Mm-hmm.
It is increased. I believe the numbers are tenfold.
Oh my goodness,
okay,
that's terrible.
In the last 5 years.
Wow.
But Hispanics, for example, they're not really opiate driven,
mm-hmm.
they're methamphetamine and cocaine driven.
Interesting.
But more Latinos now are dying from overdose because the cocaine and the meth is laced with fentanyl.
That's awful.
So
that's terrible.
Right? So now you have Hispanic families, Latino families, that are still saying, oh, we don't have that problem.
Right.
In our family.
In spite of the trauma they're going through.
In spite
right.
of all
yeah.
the trauma that right. they're going through.
Right.
So I'm trying to work with Univision a little bit.
Oh,
I'm
great.
Trying to get
excellent.
That message out.
Excellent.
Because, by the way, that message is, we are not doing a good job on getting that message out to the Latino community or the Sikh community
right.
or any other community. By
sure.
the way, we've had several overdoses in the Sikh community.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we got to get that message to every culture.
Right. Well, that's good. I'm glad that process is starting, because it's just awful. That
it
when
is.
You, it doesn't matter what your family looks like or who they are, losing a child or losing a loved one, it's just, I don't know how you recover from that,
yeah,
especially in this way. Because the survivor's guilt must be just heart-wrenching.
Look, that's and not trying to say this is about me, because it's not, but I can't tell you how many times over the years I've asked myself, why did I survive?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what, right? What
yeah.
was, what was, why was that decision made, so to speak?
Well, I don't want to get so too philosophical, but the reality is the one blessing we have is that you've used it to, it wasn't in vain. You survived.
That's correct.
But you start talking about 10,000 families you've
yeah.
touched, and that's more people, and that's spreading.
Yeah.
There was an event, I think it was early on, I don't know if it was through the Business Journal, but something had happened. I think you were being honored at a dinner. And just to see the number of people in that room that were just mm-hmm. grateful to you from different families in Northwest, a lot of the Northwest.
Yeah.
And I realized, oh, this is someone who really has touched a lot of people in a way. It's not about like you fixed someone's curb and sidewalk. It's a personal thing. And that's something that I think if I'm going to be a responsible elected, I need to help that person do that more.
Yeah. You know, look, and I think a couple of things on that. I'm also known as the hard ass.
That's good.
Okay. yeah. And there are people that don't appreciate that too much, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
I can live with it.
Sure.
All right. And I'm hoping your kid can live with it.
Right.
Right. Because I'm gonna tell the truth no matter what.
Right.
And sort of like damn the consequences, you
right.
know. And again, not to put anybody down, but we're not telling the truth enough about this. Mm. We're not really given that message. It's like right now, just in general, in society, we're not talking about treatment. We're not talking about treatment options. We're talking about how we keep people alive and how we keep them sustained on MAT drugs is what we call them, okay. Medically assisted treatment, but with Suboxone and methadone and all these other ways and right. fentanyl test strips and on and on and on. And we're not even giving somebody the opportunity. Now, if we even had the opportunity to get somebody that treatment, we can't get them into a treatment center.
Yeah, let's talk about that because for me, as a policymaker, I was really alarmed when we were talking before the show about that. So a lot of the Medi-Cal patients are eligible for treatment, correct?
Correct.
But how difficult is it to get Medi-Cal? Like, let's say a judge says, as a condition of your release or diversion, you need to go to a treatment program immediately. But I don't have Medi-Cal.
If they don't have Medi-Cal?
Yeah.
Okay, if they don't have Medi-Cal, look, then...
You haven't signed up at least, I should say.
Okay, so if you don't have Medi-Cal, in other words, that probably means you don't have a PPO insurance either.
Right.
Because treatment's split into two different sections. Okay. Those with PPO insurance and the cash available to pay for treatment, and those that have governmental aid insurance of some kind, such as Medi-Cal.
I'm assuming that there must be a huge number of that as well.
Huge.
Right.
Okay. Basic treatment today, this is, and believe it or not, this is not over the top pricing because of where we live. Basic treatment can run from $15,000 to $50,000 a month in a private treatment center cash.
Wow.
And again, there's reasons for that. And that $30,000 range is not even out of the ballpark.
Right.
Now, you've got treatment centers that are a lot more than now I'm going to argue with them on that,
right?
When they're charging $100,000.
But what do you do if you don't, let's say
you're out of luck.
Right.
You're simply out of luck, wow. Mike. And then, even to get into a program, we're not educating the public properly. When you have an opioid addiction, if you have an alcohol problem, if you've got a methamphetamine, by the way, Medi-Cal and private insurance will not pay for a methamphetamine or a cocaine withdrawal treatment.
Why is that?
I have no idea. Oh. None.
They single out that drug.
Yes.
Yeah. Those drugs and
yes.
say no.
Yes. As a no.
If you or a loved one is struggling with addiction, please call PAIN, Parents and Addicts in Need, at 559-579-1551 or visit us online at painnonprofit.org. Follow us on social media on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at PAIN Nonprofit. And please subscribe to the Don't Hide the Scars podcast and share with others wherever you get podcasts and on YouTube. And if you would like to donate to PAIN, Parents and Addicts in Need, please click the link in the description to make your tax-deductible donation today and help us save more lives gripped by addiction.
Correct me on that. If it's co-occurring, let's say it was alcohol and methamphetamine.
Then
okay, good. Then
both.
You could take the person because of alcohol. Like, we literally know someone that couldn't get someone in because of their methamphetamine goes, I hate to do this to you. Here's a six-pack. Drink it, and I'm taking you.
This is stuff people need to know about. I had no idea.
Absolutely.
Wow.
But what it does is it really irritates certain people out there.
Sure.
Okay? And again, we're not here to irritate. We're here to find out the reasons why some of this stuff isn't being done.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it that when people call a national hotline, they can't get a live person to talk to?
Is that happening now?
Yeah.
All day long.
We always assume, like you see the commercials, the suicide hotline. I mean, that's...
Suicide may be different.
Okay.
I'm not putting them all into the same category. I'm talking about drug and alcohol treatment.
Hotlines.
You specifically call after 5 o'clock, you will not get a live person.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, I do understand, all right? I do understand because it's happened here. It's happened with my treatment center, especially with employees. The employees are hard to get.
Sure.
They don't stay around.
Sure.
Hell, half of them don't even show up after you hire them. And so we're all in that kind of a mess. But we're talking about, call it an industry, whatever you want to call it, that needs that live person to talk to.
Of course,
we're simply not providing that. Mm. And as a recovering addict, or even when I was a practicing addict, if I'm not talking to somebody in less than 2 minutes, that phone's getting hung up,
sure.
and I'm down the road.
Yeah, you're lucky you even get 2 minutes.
You bet.
Look today with these phones, we have Instagram, if you've ever used that.
I do.
It's like my attention span. I have to put it down now because I'll just, 30 seconds, I'm done. You can't do that. You got to really get into, delve into something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So again, you know, I want the city of Fresno. I want the county of Fresno. I want us to thrive in this thing.
Absolutely.
I want us to be leaders in this. I want us to be able to say what we do and do what we say and mean what we say.
Well, it's so important to quality of life. We talked earlier about some of the other things like infrastructure issues, public safety issues, but this is about family. This is absolutely about quality, life itself. So I'm really grateful to be able to continue communicating with you, to be on your show and be educated about. So I've learned a few things today I didn't know about.
Mm-hmm. Let me just interrupt real quick.
Sure.
Public safety.
Yep.
You don't think public safety is an issue when you're talking about addicts on the street?
Oh, of course.
Absolutely.
Fires, robberies, whatever it is,
because that's what the addict does when they're in that state.
Right.
They have to.
Right.
Not that they want to.
They're just,
they have to.
Yeah. They're not in their right mind anymore.
Right.
Yeah. Right. That's a good point.
Well, it's that crowbar separation that hopefully people understand is that addiction in itself is not a moral failing,
mm-hmm.
but like Flint said, the things that we will do to obtain whatever our substance is, it's still a moral failing.
I like that statement, though, because it takes the stigma out of addiction.
Yes.
Right.
It happens. We can't just assume it doesn't happen. And right. the more I think you make people feel guilty about it, that's going to make it, it compounds the problem.
Yeah.
I think that it's going to sound so silly because it's a word that's overused. Hope is a very important part of life. It's so necessary.
It's our key
if
word
you,
here.
If you take it away, then, I mean, what's the point? That puts you more down the rabbit hole. I mean,
yeah. Right.
So.
Right. And here's the other thing that I have found, though, over the years. In fact, I had a conversation with a lady the other just last week who mm-hmm. her son is on the street still, mm-hmm. and she's doing the best that she can.
Sure.
But, you know, it's like we get these parents in here, and let me start with this. We go to Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
We're all sitting up there.
Right.
We're before the Public Health and Safety Committee, and we're given our 2 cents worth. And all of a sudden you see the opposition side that want free drugs and want free needles and want free this and all that. They're bringing people in by the truckload.
Right.
I can't get parents to go, even after they've lost a child,
right.
get up there and say, hey, we're in support of.
Right. That's interesting. Why, I've noticed that with other issues too. Why is there opposition to what you do? Tell me, in your field, who's funding that? Where is it coming from?
Okay, I'm going to give you an example. There's a company called DanceSafe.org.
Okay.
They are a dance promoter. They promote raves.
Okay. Oh, well, I get it now.
Okay.
Right.
They're also providing free fentanyl test strips. They're providing all this stuff. Okay. All right. Well, A, they don't want somebody to die at one of their events.
Sure.
Yeah, right? It's a good liability.
Correct.
Thing.
Right.
Exactly. But we are in that society of you can do what you want with your body. And there are organizations out there that, again, it's not everybody can get, that's not me saying it, it's right. them. Not everybody can get clean. Not everybody wants to get clean. So let's just make sure they don't die.
Well, maybe not, we talked about Matthew Perry earlier. Maybe not everybody wants to get clean, but they can.
But they can. Yeah. And we're not giving them the option to get clean. We're basically saying, here, just take this.
It's enabling.
Yeah, and we're going to keep you alive. Right. But I can guarantee you, When you are on lifelong methadone, nobody talks about the health problems that are going to come one's way.
Sure.
On being on methadone for years and years and years. The heart problems, the bowel problems, the sleep disorder, all of that stuff that comes with it.
Right.
So again, if it's always somebody's choice what they want to do, but let's inform them on both sides of the aisle, so to speak, mm-hmm. of this is what could or can happen to you if you continue down this road. If those things were told to people, I would venture to say there's going to be more people going, you know what, I think I need to try abstinence.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and I see it as a big accountability issue too, Mike, because, you know, in the grand scheme of the addict part of my brain, it would like to be at the bar right now mm-hmm. chasing women.
Right.
But the accountability is I have 2 children. I have a wonderful woman, mm-hmm. also a teacher.
Great.
And I have a responsibility to society and all these things. And we've just taken away accountability.
Right.
Like, it's not your problem or it's not your fault. Like, I didn't ask for things that maybe happened in my childhood or a family lineage of addiction or any of these things. I didn't ask for them.
Right.
But this is what life has gifted me. It's my responsibility.
Right.
I have to be accountable for it.
Right. It's interesting.
Nobody's going to get me to a meeting. Nobody's going to get me to call Flint when I'm having a tough day or my sponsor. Whatever. It's an accountability issue that we've just removed.
And I don't want to switch gears too much here, but when it comes to accountability, it kind of – one of the things that really frustrated me in this state was how we've passed – and this is – you guys know what I'm talking about. Prop 47 and 57, how we basically taken away accountability. Did you know that what it changed was, for example, if you – this is really uncomfortable, but I'm going to say it. If you rape an unconscious person, it's no longer a felony. On that category. They decriminalized it. That's ridiculous. Wow. So why have we done that? Why have we – it's like, okay, the solution is we have too many people in prison, too many people of color. Okay, fine. It's like you said, we're not talking about the real issue. It's the surface of it.
Right.
So our solution is don't build prisons and reduce the crime so they don't get charged with crimes that make them go to prison. But the crimes are still happening. People of color are repeatedly being victimized within their communities over and over again. And that creates more trauma that leads to drug abuse.
Yep, of course.
So exactly. It's all, you're right. Where is the personal accountability? Like it used to be, I'm not saying we were ashamed. Well, we were a shame-based society. Now there's pros and cons to that.
Yep.
Pros and cons. If you're shame-based, you feel a stigma to getting treatment. That's bad. You should be able to get treatment. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you would think, I'm not going to do this because my family's going to think I'm a terrible person.
Right.
That sometimes was enough of an incentive to like, oh, I'm not going to do this. But I think when you cross that line, we got to give that hope someone can come back and redeem themselves. It's very important.
Yes. You bet. Yeah. Redemption is...
Absolutely. Can't take that away from people.
And I have seen people over the years that I would never even thought would come out of it.
Sure. And it's happened. That's wonderful.
Came out of it.
That's wonderful.
I'm going to just tell you this quick little story because Jason's heard me talk about this guy forever. His name's Mark.
Yep.
His brother and I were great friends in high school. Mark's about 2 years older than I am. Mm-hmm. And Mark loved LSD. Absolutely loved it. So in 1974, Mark took one too many acid trips and his brain fried.
Right.
Fried.
Permanently. Like just damaged.
Gone. Wow. Gone. So for the last however many years, since 1974, Mark had been living at First and Shields on a corner in a garbage trash can, basically, wandering the areas.
Right.
Last time I saw Mark was about 6 years ago at his mother's funeral. They found him. He looked like Ted Kaczynski.
Right.
Right? The Unabomber.
Sure, sure.
I don't know. 3-4 months ago, I'm talking to a couple of my buddies from high school, and they go, hey, did you hear about Mark?
And I go... And you're thinking...
I'm going, when did he die?
Right.
You know, they look at me and go, no, man, he's living up with his brother. He's not living with his brother, but down the street in a small little apartment. Mm. He's doing fine. He's actually has a little part-time job. I'm going.
That's great.
Unbelievable.
Right.
I mean, how
after all those years.
After all those years. So right. I've seen it happen.
Right.
Okay. I've seen it happen. The because to me there's nothing. This is what I tell parents. I spoke in front of Teens That Care a couple of weeks ago. I love that little organization. Mm-hmm. They're just marvelous parents and kids and the whole deal. I told them, I said, there's nothing worse than wasted talent.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Nothing worse.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Because everybody's got a talent of some sort.
Right.
Right. You contribute somewhere. Even if you don't think you're contributing, I guarantee it you are.
I think kids need to hear that now more than ever because they're competing with, you know, the what they see on the media and Instagram and Facebook and TikTok. Well, not even Facebook's old. Right. TikTok and
for us old
all
folks.
That
us
stuff, old Discord, all that stuff. And it's just, again, it's like you said, the despair that leads to going down those paths thinking, well, why not give this a try? What else do I have to lose? I have a crappy situation at home. I don't know if I'm going to eat tonight. So, what the hell? I'll party and have fun. But they're kids. They don't know the consequences of that.
They don't. Yeah. They don't. And again, that's the parent's role that I just too many parents are not taking. They're not talking to their kids enough.
And again, no accountability for the parents.
Yeah.
Right.
There was, and I don't want to get too political, but there was that case I read about. I guess the mother of the shooter in Michigan, I guess, just got charged with a serious, she's going to go to jail now because I guess she didn't do enough to make sure he didn't have the weapons to use to abuse the guns that killed those people.
Right.
So, I mean, it's kind of surprising, but
there
needs to be some kind of accountability when you don't do your job.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, and you brought up certain, you know, communities where we see it more than others.
Sure.
You know, what can we do to identify a lot of those things? Like, well, absentee fathers. Mm-hmm. How can we encourage that?
Oh, don't talk about that. You're being discriminatory. Right, but we have to talk about it. It happens.
I'm sorry. It does happen. Like, if you're people that love your data, you can't go, I like this data. Right. I don't like that data. How do we do that? How do we instill this more in certain cultures? How do we even maybe help the process? Hey, look, I went through a divorce, but you know, we work on co-parent. How do we encourage that?
Right.
What can we do to actually really offer that and not just go, well, mom get the kids and then you go just make sure you make money. It's like, come on, we got to really change a lot of certain things when it comes to this to help within each and every community.
If anything, we have to talk about it to break down the stigma.
Yeah. Right.
That's the only way we're going to do it.
Right.
Yeah.
So. Well, and the thing that bothers me a great deal, mm-hmm. especially about Sacramento and the whole fentanyl epidemic, is that they are not willing to talk to those of us that know. They will talk to a psychologist, a psychiatrist that has absolutely no experience in this whatsoever, no personal firsthand experience. And let me tell you something, there is not an educated person out there that knows more than I do about addiction because I lived it.
Right.
Because I know every single thing that we do and don't do when we're in our addiction because I did it all. I'm not trying to sound arrogant. I'm not trying to sound cocky.
It's not that. That's how, because when I've heard you, remember I told you the first time I really heard you talk about this, and since then, the reason why I'm confident in what you're saying is because it is a lived experience.
Right.
And I feel like, okay, this is a person who has hit rock bottom, knows what that means. I can say rock bottom. I don't know what that is. I can say it, but I don't know it. You've done it and you've come out of it. So why wouldn't we listen to someone like you? What concerns me, Flint, is that what you're telling me about Sacramento, if they're going to the wrong person because they want someone with a title, that concerns me a lot. There's a lot of people that don't have, look, I'm very lucky I got to go to Fresno State and get a degree. Great. I have a lot of very important people in my life that are very intelligent in their own way, that have weight, they can do things I can't do.
Right.
They didn't go to college, so what? But they have experience and skills. That to me means more, frankly. Because you could be educated and be dumb. So sorry to put it that way.
No, we see it all day long on TikTok.
But, but to me, experience means a lot more than just, I mean, you know, what's the experience is everything.
It does, and the other thing is we cannot go to Sacramento and go before the Public Health and Safety Committee and expect to get out what we need to get out in 6 minutes.
Right, it's hard. Right,
it's just impossible.
Right.
To do.
Right,
we can't even get a private meeting with most of these people in Sacramento.
That's a shame.
Because all I want to do is to be able to say, look, guys, let me spend 1 hour with you.
Right.
1 hour. And that hour, I could probably fill your head with more about addiction than you've learned in the last 20 years.
Right.
Because until we as a society, as cities and counties, until we understand what addiction is, how it really works, and what it's going to take to really help somebody get clean and sober, we are the proverbial hamster on the wheel in the cage.
And that's actually a great point. I really, if for anything, would love for you to be able to sit down with these people just to convince them how to reform Medi-Cal. And I say that because if you can't even get access to treatment because you can't get the, and you say it's $15,000 to $50,000 a month, even if you're on Medi-Cal, if you can't get that basic coverage, then you're going to start committing crimes. You're going to start doing, what was it you said, the behaviors you do because you're in, and that costs taxpayers money too. So it's actually cheaper to be preventative. It is, but they just won't do it because the system's broken. We can fix it. You can fix it, but decisions have to be made. But if you don't know, you know.
And I'm just going to take it one step further.
Right?
Right. Insurance companies in general. And I'm talking about I'm talking about the Aetnas of the world, the Anthem Blue Cross. So I'm talking about these folks. Do you know now it is their job to give that client less time in our treatment facility? 28 days, we very seldom get anymore. It's 17 to 23 days now because their job is to get that person out of there. This is what doesn't make sense. And get them into outpatient services, which they'll pay for all day long.
Right.
Okay.
It's the same as the state issue with, you know, a lot of the folks we have that are unhoused in the community that have substance abuse, mental health issues. It's all outpatient. And that is the worst thing in the world we did to ourselves because there are people that they have no family, no support structure. We don't do conservatorship.
Right.
And they, I'm not saying you put them away and lock away the key. Absolutely not.
I get you.
Never.
I understand.
But they need around-the-clock care. Yeah. They're a danger to themselves.
Oh yeah,
it's not compassionate. They're a danger to others. It's awful.
Yeah. Right.
But our solution is outpatient.
Right.
How is someone schizophrenic supposed to know to take their medication at a certain time?
Yeah. Right.
Yep.
No,
that's an extreme example, but I'm just saying it happens.
No, but it happens true. All day long.
Right.
Flint knows nothing gets me more riled up than that. Again, kind of going back to what he's saying. You know, your life, your body. But when is the point where it shifts to compassion is taking care of this person, not letting right. them roam the streets.
Right.
And I've seen it worse and worse. I have my buddy, I've even said, hey, I can get you help. This young man, Arthur, seems to be methamphetamine is his choice. When he's sober, he's great. When he's high, he's in a state of psychosis, reenacting all the abuse that he's been through. And I'm going to tell you, it's physical and sexual trauma because it's every single time.
Right.
And all this. But how compassionate is that to leave him out there? Or anybody else.
No, it's absolutely not.
It's not.
It's awful. It's awful.
It's not. And the answer isn't as simple as, we had a motel that's shut down, so we're going to go ahead and, hey, here's your key.
Right.
No, they're just going to be one of those people that die at an address.
And you talked about one thing that we touched on a little bit is the issue of childhood trauma. So I'll never forget. I maybe went to dozens and dozens of these calls on my ride-alongs. The one that I'll never forget, it was a Friday. It was like 4:30 we got the call. So we were there till like 8 or 9. And it was and again, this is not happy stuff. We happened to be in Southeast. This can happen anywhere.
Sure.
There was the cutest little 3-year-old who was sexually abused by his 12-year-old uncle. Now that 12-year-old learned it from somewhere.
Right.
And probably was a victim and just victimized a child. So the child's talking to the officer. The officer just did an amazing job, just kind of like just not asking questions, having a conversation, and the kid gave all the volunteer information. And the mom was there. And this is we've improved things since that, but this is years ago where the officer said, look, it's Friday. It's now 7 or 8 o'clock, and the services are not available, but I'm going to give you a number to call. Now we have resources we can call 24 hours. And she said, no, I have that number because my daughter was a victim of human trafficking. Ugh. So it's this, and not that it matters, they were white. So it's not just people of color. It happens everywhere.
Everywhere.
And it's usually, to me, it's about poverty, frankly. That's the link. But it's really unfortunate that we're not even talking about these things. This childhood trauma in our community that exists is a problem. And we have to start holding people accountable, to people that commit. And by the way, you don't have to be an evil person. You could just be a bad parent who's just not responsible and create trauma for your kid.
Yeah,
right.
And yeah, I'm being judgmental. I'll admit it. I'm being judgmental because it's not right. Yeah. You know, you had the child. It's an important thing to do. Maybe I'm going too far.
I think there's a point where we have to make a judgment. We have to, because if we don't have some discernment on this stuff.
Right.
Where it's where we say this is societally this is not okay and this is how we take action.
Here's the thing. This is going to sound silly, but go when you drive today later and you're going to see someone who's unhoused and disheveled, looks like Ted Kaczynski, like you said.
Right.
That person was a kid.
Oh,
probably
yeah.
the cutest little kid in the world.
In a baseball uniform or a cheerleader outfit,
right?
Or whatever the case may be, you bet.
And something happened, and there are people that contributed to that trauma. It could be a bad friend that said, "Hey, take this drug," and you're just on the path. But that's not always that case.
Right.
It's little by little things that happen that lead to this terrible. You know, a flood doesn't happen all of a sudden. It's drop by drop that creates enough mass and creates a flood.
You bet.
So, anyways.
Let me bring this up. And I remember I was talking about the lady I talked to last week.
Yeah.
Right? She made two great points here. Her son is giving plasma.
Mm.
Do you know what he's making a month by giving plasma?
That's all he does? I don't know.
$800 to $900 a month.
Wow.
Giving plasma.
Wow.
Now, her point, and I agree, the people that are taking his blood...
Mm-hmm.
They got to know this kid's an addict.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to ask ourselves a question. Are they enabling?
That's a good question. Let me ask you this question, though. If the plasma is still safe to use and there's a shortage, that's a tough call.
It's a tough call.
That's a tough call.
It's a tough
that's
call.
Great. That's uh-huh. a tough call.
But
you're right
but
because
I want you to think about that one.
He's using the money. Oh, that's tough.
And he's using the system.
That is a tough call.
He's actually abusing the system.
He's abusing the system, and he's using the money to continue his habit, right, which is not helping him get to that rock bottom so he can turn himself around. But
now here's one.
That's a tough one.
Same kid.
Right.
He's living right down here, the motel at Ashland and Blackstone. At Ashland and Blackstone. Mm-hmm. Right. The manager will not let the parent know what room he's in.
How old is he?
He's an adult.
That's a tough one.
I know.
I mean, this is why we need things like conservatorship.
I know.
Yeah. If I was the parent, I would say, to hell with you, I want to know. And I know. In our culture, in the Persian culture, I'm
knocking the door down. I'm going through.
My parents told me, my dad's 80, going to turn 82 this Saturday. And he said, I don't care how old you are, you're my kid.
Right. Yeah. I'm going through walls for you.
I know.
Right.
That's what we need.
Right.
That's what we,
just because we dance like this doesn't mean we take your BS. Yes. Right.
And you know what? And to me, you know, poverty can really cause. There have been tough times. We had a small business. There were tough times growing up. We were always okay, thank God, but there were tough times. But poverty doesn't necessarily stop you from being there as a good parent. Now, maybe you work more, but it doesn't stop you from showing your kid love. It's something you don't. Someone very dear to me had a father. Mother was very poor. Father was extremely wealthy. Things happened, whatever. But what hurts this person the most is that they didn't feel that love from the father. Mm-hmm. And this person reveres their father. But that trauma stayed. And this is a person who ended up being successful, thank goodness. But that just sticks with you. Something as small as that will stick with you forever.
Sure.
How does that not lead to the path of going down the wrong path?
Yeah. Because there are always reasons why we use.
Right.
Why we use a substance. Right. And again, I don't care what it is. The girlfriend broke up with us when we were 15, didn't make the high school basketball team. Oh, by the way, maybe you were sexually molested or physically beaten by your parent. You know, so nobody says, I'm going to be a drug addict when I grow up because I really like that lifestyle.
Right.
You know, I don't particularly want to crap on a street corner.
Right.
Right. But there's reasons behind it. So when we're talking about whether it's substance abuse or mental health, we are doing a lousy job of getting to the issues with these people on why.
Why aren't we teaching? We teach sex ed in school.
Mm-hmm.
And the stigma on that's over. We've gone through all that. Now it's a normal thing. Why aren't we teaching resiliency in school?
I don't know.
Flint and I say all the time, it would be great if we instilled a 12-step program. And just in the principles, not sitting here saying, it's like it's AA.
Some people might think this. Well, if you teach my child about what marijuana is or what, fentanyl. But here's the thing. You got freaking the phone. They're going to find all this stuff on here anyways. It's much worse. At least they can learn it in an environment that's more clinical and more responsible and
that's
has some standards.
That's why school districts for a lot of years, I went through the first part of my career here, right, speaking at every school.
Right.
Then I went through a stage where I wasn't speaking at any school because they thought I was too tough because I was saying too much.
Right.
It's like, really, folks?
I mean, you ever watch I was talking to my fiance the other day about if I ever become a dad, we're getting to that point where we're thinking, it's time because I just turned 40. We got to make a decision. and what kind of TV dad I would be. And one of my favorite TV dads is Red Foreman from that 70s show. He's a bit of a hard ass.
Yeah.
But guess what? Yeah. He's a good dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
The love is there.
It's funny you bring that up because I was talking with someone about that. Did we talk about it on here too? That just TV dads now, they're the bumbling idiot.
They really
like,
are.
Hey, I love The Simpsons, but Homer Simpson is an incompetent.
Right.
Family Guy, an incompetent. Right. All these other, there's incompetent individuals. Right. Like, give me Jason Seaver again from, you know.
Growing Pains. Yeah. Right. Or give me Uncle Phil from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Loving, but for accountability. Yes. And, you know, hey, this is like, Uncle Phil.
That's a great,
Hey, Will, you did this. You're going to have to clean up your mess. I'll stand behind you, but it's your mess to clean up.
Absolutely.
You know?
This I would have to say, I actually am very pleased. Thank you for inviting me because this conversation was a lot deeper than I was expecting, but it was great.
It's kind of
like a mental, exercise because, when you're in politics, sometimes you're always worried. I don't want to offend anybody. I don't want to say this or that, but I think what people want is someone who's real. They want to know what you really believe and they want you to be real. And this is kind of an opportunity to kind of spread that.
Yeah.
This is what I think. So
yeah, absolutely. Look, it's there's nothing wrong with being real.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
not at all.
I sleep very well at night, knowing the things that I say yes are could possibly irritate somebody.
Right.
But on the other hand, I look at the successes that we've had here, and there's nothing better than when I get a kid that calls me out of nowhere, you know, 8 years later, and say, and I had one, okay, about 3 months ago, that out of nowhere sent me this unbelievable text on how well he's doing, and I never thought he would be doing great at all.
Okay.
And he said, Flint, he goes, I was such an asshole to you. he said, I can't tell you how much I apologize. Oh. And I told him, I said, whoever. I said, well, I was an asshole to you too.
Oh, there you go.
I said, but you know, when you hear that and you see that,
right?
That's why I keep saying the things that I do. That's why you need to keep saying the things you do and the same things you do, because those successes, sometimes they're few, sometimes they're many, but man, do they overweigh all the rest.
That makes it worth it.
You know, and it makes
That's why we need to do what you do. Thank you both.
Thank you. I appreciate it, my friend.
Thanks.
Absolutely.
And thank you for listening on either Apple Podcast or Spotify. If it's your first time, hit that subscribe button, and please leave us a rating and review. And if you're watching us on YouTube, hit that subscribe button. Make sure the bell is on for all alerts. That way, anytime Payne releases content here on the channel, you get an alert. Mr. Anderson.
Mr. LaChance, thank you as always.
Yes,
thank
sir.
Thank you, Mr. Carbasi.
My pleasure.
We always use the mister at the end of the show.
If you or a loved one is struggling with addiction, please call Payne, Parents and Addicts in Need, at 559-579-1551 or visit us online at paynonprofit.org. Follow us on social media on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at Payne Nonprofit. And please subscribe to the Don't Hide the Scars podcast and share with others wherever you get podcasts and on YouTube. And if you would like to donate to Payne, Parents and Addicts in Need, please click the link in the description to make your tax-deductible donation today and help us save more lives gripped by addiction.